Okay, welcome to the November 1st, 2023 meeting of the Clark County Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board. Just a reminder, our meeting is being audio recorded, and so it will be later posted if anybody wants to go back and listen to what we discussed. Thank you for joining us. We have a rather large crew, and we have people in person even. Our first order of business, is there any community input?
I have something.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to announce we have scheduled a presentation for tomorrow at Clark College that has been sent out by the county and announced widely. And we ended up having to cancel that, and it's going to be rescheduled for the spring. So I just wanted to make sure everyone was aware of that. Mm-hmm. And then also let them know that we have some excellent trainings coming up. If they wanted to check the website, we have a master planning for training coming up. I think it's November 8th with Mary McDermott for parents and caregivers around creating master plans for your loved one who experiences intellectual development. And that's going to be on Zoom. So all that information is on our website.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Darla, so when you said check the website, you're talking about the Peace website?
Correct, yes. PeaceNorthwest.org.
Okay. And the presentation that was scheduled for Clark College was about?
Sample.
But what was
it? Oh, it was WATAP. It was Washington Technology Assistance Program.
Okay.
And we're going to reschedule that for the springtime.
Okay, thank
you. So it was canceled very last minute. So I apologize for any inconvenience.
Okay. Any other community input? Okay. I'm seeing no hands. The next item on our agenda is the Developmental Disabilities Administration updates, DDA updates. So, Judy, are you ready?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for the opportunity to see everybody. And next time, definitely I'll be in person. But introductions, I am the new Acting Regional Administrator with Developmental Disabilities Administration, Region 3. I also have Andy Kohler here with us, who is our acting deputy regional administrator. We are both based out of Vancouver, but support the entire region, which spans from Clark County up the I-5 corridor to Pierce County, and we also support the peninsula. I've been with DDA since 2007 in a case manager position. I started and then had the opportunity to be a waiver specialist, field service administrator, and I am here as acting regional administrator. Really excited to be in this role and support the community and the services that we want to provide for individuals. A couple things that I think of interest for this group is we had recently posted a birth to three case resource manager position, which will be a focus specific to Clark County community outreach connection and birth to three early intervention programs. What we see is a need for additional community resources and support in that area, and we think that a birth to three case resource manager will be able to help and connect people to our services early on, and not lose individuals as they age out of early intervention services, or even if they're not in early intervention services, but getting those connections. Additionally, within the administration, we had some legislative funding for our no-paid services individuals. So those are individuals who are eligible for DDA, but they are not currently receiving a service from us, and we have now been afforded funding to hire case resource managers to serve those clients and connect with them, and expectations around reaching out to those individuals, ensuring they understand what services we have to offer, completing assessments, and then hopefully authorizing services. So we haven't had a caseload or case resource managers identified to that population of people for many years now. So we are very excited about getting case resource managers back out there to connect with individuals who aren't receiving services but are eligible for DDA. We started assigning those caseloads October 1st. So as I said, the expectation of those case resource managers is to reach out to those individuals on their caseloads and offer services, connect with them, share who we are, more information, and hopefully get them into accessing services that they are eligible for and would like to receive. The other thing that I would share is we had some legislative funding for stabilization services. Over the course of the last 2-3 years, we've seen an increase of individuals being hospitalized, not getting access to behavioral health services in a timely manner. And we got some funding to increase what we call diversion services or stabilization within Developmental Disabilities Administration. So we have what we call diversion is trying to support an individual before they go into the hospital or another institutionalized setting, hopefully getting them the resources, the tools, the skills, and the support within that setting, which could be a mobile option, so it could be in their own home, or what we call bed-based, which is like it, which is within a supported living agency. So we got funding to expand it. We do have the intention within Region 3 to expand by 2 in bed-based diversion beds, and in process of contracting at this time, and actually hope to have 2 more, which we have 4 right now, so 6 total just within our region by the end of this month, which those options are available statewide, but we really want to make sure that people can stay locally in their communities and get the support and services that they need. So we're very excited about that stabilization funding to support individuals. Comment in the chat or question. In terms of the service requests for referral case managers, it's a 1-300. A large caseload, but again, that expectation is that they're reaching out to all those individuals and offering services, including assessments where necessary. Angela.
So I don't know if that information you just presented like went hand in hand about the new position and then 4 versus 3. And the new workers, if you were looking for more than one, or was those separate positions?
Great question. So birth to three was one topic in that we're hiring a birth to three specific case resource manager. Service request and referral is another group of case resource managers, which we have already hired 13 service request and referral case managers region wide, and we have already started assigning those 1-300 individuals to them. Does that answer your question?
It totally does. And once we have individuals hired into the birth to three position, I'd love an opportunity to sit down and meet with them.
Absolutely, yes. In terms of so Region 3, I don't think I shared, is 11 offices that serve 13 counties. And yes, Carla, we can get the contact for our new case services caseload and absolutely share resources and information out to individuals. The wonderful thing about it is if you all know, as people have reached out for services, they call our service request and referral line, but now they're actually going to have a person that's connected to them, a case manager, which is so vital, than connecting via a toll-free number to get a response back. So, very excited about that. Andy, I want to make sure that you're sharing yourself, introducing yourself, and if there's things that you want to share as well.
Yeah, so I am Andy Coulter, and so I have moved into the deputy or acting deputy regional administrator role in July, and I was reporting as a business administrator prior to that, supporting Vancouver, Cowlitz, Skamania, Wakaya County, and Thurston County, and the individuals that we served in the offices there, and then prior to that was a supervisor through at-home services, which is a children's residential program that we offer within DDA. And then prior to that was a supervisor in Vancouver and then a case manager. So I've been with DDA for 8 years now, and certainly there's a lot of changes that are continuing to happen in the last couple of years, and I am excited to see the progress that is being made now, especially with the surge request referral. That is a really great opportunity for individuals to learn up front what service options could look like for them through the DDA and get some real contextual information that they would be able to make an informed choice should they want to pursue paid services. And then if they want to then take that next step into paid services, then we've got a person who can take those next steps with them. So prior, it was very much, you know, what you might hear on the street or what you might find online, and it can be very hard to navigate. So hopefully the SRR CRM will be able to assist in that navigation piece. And we do have 15 service request and referral CRMs for the region. And so they're spread out across the region in all of our offices. But for Vancouver, we do have three specific SRR CRM. Sorry, 13.
I see stuff up in the chat, and I can't catch it all before it goes away.
I'm going to ask her.
The chat up.
I was going to ask
Judy had mentioned the mobile-based version is in Vancouver. We don't have a bed-based diversion in Clark County right now. So the closest bed-based diversion would be in the Lacey area. So we have two bed-based diversion beds that are available.
What I would say, though, if you are aware of an agency that's interested in exploring diversion as an option, which right now, as I shared, legislatively, we received funding to increase that number of diversion beds. So we have our regional clinical team and a behavior or a stabilization specialist, Brian Johnson, who is open for conversations with anybody who's interested in exploring that option for bed-based diversion or mobile diversion. So local would be great. But currently, as Andy said, it's Lacey closest here, and then we have two in Lacey, two in Puyallup at this point.
Just to add one more element, programmatic piece, there's an enhanced case management program, and we've also received funding to expand that. So the enhanced case management program is a caseload of smaller number ratio. The intent is to assist individuals who are at a higher risk of harm. That might be that they live with their paid provider and their APS allegations, or there's some real concerns with their environment that could impact the person's safety. And the enhanced case management CRM would be assisting to relieve some of those risks, some of those behaviors, which we've seen some really tremendous outcomes where people have, in the greatest extent, like we save lives in supporting people to get out of situations or be able to advocate for people who needed that advocacy piece. So, which again, it's really great that there's the expansion of this program, which
I have,
I have a question.
I have a question.
Because they see that lowering caseload numbers does have an impact on better quality of services. So we hope that for the future that that might be something that we'll be able to share back out with the group, should that be supported by legislature.
Okay, I think Trish might have a question.
Diversion services or stabilization services for minors?
Sorry. I think Trish has a question before you move on to your next.
Hey, Andy. Hi, Judy. Thanks so much for being here tonight. I do have a question about case sizes, or the case resource managers' caseloads. There's been some discussion about reducing the number of people on caseloads. Was that something that passed, or is that in the decision package for 2024?
So it's currently been forwarded in terms of a recommendation priority from CSHS. It has not, the governor has not made a decision on that, so governor review for its recommendation and then legislatively. So nothing has passed at this point.
Thanks.
And then to answer the question in terms of diversion or stabilization services, we have what's called intensive habilitation services, which is a program that youth can access, but it is a diversion program. It's a habilitative model similar to our what we call diversion for 18 and over. And that's an option for our youth. Sorry, I got sidetracked by the chat for a second. So intensive habilitative services is
Yes,
and enhanced respite services. Thank you, Andy.
With enhanced respite services, there is one provider that we have statewide, which is on the opposite end of the state, but it is a resource that anyone would be able to tap into. So we currently do not have an ERS contracted provider in our region. We do have an enhanced out-of-home services provider, which is brand new. They are in Fort Orchard, but that is, they're newly up and coming. The intent is to assist and support a person coming out of an institutional facility, whether that might be through CLIP or hospital setting, to help with a higher level of stabilization to support a person potentially in out-of-home services, if that's the request of the family.
Andy, could you please repeat the name of that last one that's in Fort Orchard?
Yeah, it's called Enhanced Out-of-Home Services, or EOHS, and it was funded this last legislative session, so there's funds to provide this level of support. We happen to have two providers, I believe, statewide, and one of them is in Region 3. Then we also have some other providers that we're in conversations with who may also be interested in contracting for EOHS and other residential services for kids.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for all that information and updates. Do we have any other questions for either Judy or Andy at this time? I'm not seeing any. Thank you so much. That was a lot. And there might be questions that come up later, so you might be hearing from people with more clarification or information. And then, Darla, you were going to get the information for the new positions when... Cool. All right. Next on our agenda, we have Developmental Disabilities Council. So Brandy Montz is remote, and then Alex Cobalt is in the room. And so you guys can work together.
Hi, everyone. This is Brandy. Alex, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Awesome. Do you want to go first? I think that was the plan, yeah?
Yes, that was the plan.
Great.
All right. Hopefully everybody can hear me all right. I am Alex Sobel. I'm from Clark County, as most of you in here know. I'm on the DDC Council, which is the Developmental Disability Council. And I am the chair, the chair of the Membership and Governance Committee. And, yeah, now I think it's your turn, right?
Great. Thank you, Alex. And I just want to give a shout-out to both Alex and Gabriella, who are in the room. They are current council members and have helped me. I've been here for 14 months, helped me learn a lot, and I really appreciate their service on the council and their continued efforts to make the lives of folks with IDD in Washington better. So real quick, if it would be helpful, I'll just give you all a quick overview of the DD Council. So in our country, if the states are receiving Medicaid services, they have to receive, or they have to have a few things in place according to this big federal law called the DD Act. One is they have to have a council, like the one I work for. They have to have a university center focused on the excellence for folks with IDD. In our state, that's the University of Washington USID program. And then the third thing they have to have is a protection and advocacy organization. In our state, that's Disability Rights Washington. And actually, Washington is unique because we actually have a fourth organization in our team that is Allies in Advocacy. It's an organization run by and for people with IDD, and they were originally supported and funded by the other sister part, we call ourselves sister organizations, the UW, the DDC, and Disability Rights Washington. So the four of us make up kind of this unit, and the federal government does special things to help us collaborate with each other, and it is expected that we're all working towards similar goals. So for example, during COVID, the federal government gave us funding to help reach into communities that have been typically unserved or underserved around COVID hesitancy, folks who were had concerns about the vaccination program or going on in the communities. And so the CRW, and allies worked to get funding out to small businesses and local communities who had been historically underrepresented or not part of the bigger system. And that's just a quick example. I'm going to delve into the council. So at the council, the law, the federal law, says that we have to have 60% of our members experiencing developmental disabilities or being a family member or guardian of someone who does. And then the other 40% of our membership is made up of folks who are appointed by the state agencies that serve the community. So we have someone sitting on our council from DDA, and someone from the Division of Oak Rehab, and someone from the Office of Superintendent for Public Instruction, the education system. The governor actually selects the 60% of people who have lived experience of IDD or family members or guardians, and then the folks in charge of the state agencies select their representatives to serve on the council. We currently have 25 seats. We actually have 27, according to our charter, but the governor's office said that's kind of a big council. Maybe we should pull it back to 25. So we currently have two vacancies. And our members, like Gabriella and Alex, serve for a three-year term, and they can renew once, so up to 6 years of service to the community. The council gets about $1.6 million a year from the federal government, and we kind of have three target areas. We are supposed to build capacity for folks with IDD in our community. We're supposed to run pilots and show new examples of how service can look for our community, and we're supposed to advocate. And I think in Washington State, we have a pretty strong advocacy history and lots of different initiatives to help folks speak to their elected officials about what's needed in our state and in our service system. And that's all done with a five-year plan. And I'm going to try, I'm going to see if I can share my screen, if that's okay real quick, because I'd love to show you folks our website so that you can go back here when you're not listening to me talk. That's actually disabled, but I'm happy to put, if that's not fixable right now, I can just put our
website. Brandy, I think Trish is going to make it so you can share. Hold on. Give her a second.
Ooh, thank you. Yeah, thank you. So we are required to have a five-year plan. Right now we're in the middle of our five-year plan, so we're going to start working on our next plan here pretty soon. And there's all these goals. So for example, this current plan has a lot of focus on serving people of color and rural communities and communities that use language other than English. And so you'll see in the work we're doing, in the contracts that we put out to the community, we're really focused on how to meet those goals. And what we do is every year we collect the information from the organizations that are doing the work out in the community, and we give it back to the federal government, and we say, this is how we're impacting our community based on the goals that we had. So thank you very much for letting me share my screen. Here's the website that I was hoping to take you folks to. If you want to learn about our state plan, you can go to what we do. And here is a rundown of the council's state plan. There's a shortened version here that can give you a good sense of what our goals are in the current five-year state plan. I would also encourage you, if you want to see the work we're doing to get to those goals, the council activities page has lots of stuff going on. I know recently someone was asking about the Dan Thompson Advisory Committee. You folks know during the pandemic, the federal government gave our community some Recovery Act money, $50 million of it. And in our law here in Washington State, we have this thing called the Dan Thompson Memorial Trust. And that the law says that the council and DDA are trying to work together. The council is supposed to help direct where the money goes that's in the Dan Thompson Fund. And the legislature decided to put that $50 million into this fund. So it's a huge amount of money. And if you go here, you can look at all kinds of cool stuff that's happened as a result of the Dan Thompson project that I bet a lot of you folks have touched in different ways. There's lots of cool, innovative programs happening out in the community right now for our community, for our IDD community. Just an FYI, in general, right now, the way that that account is set up is that the legislature puts $2 million in every 2 years. And so we're getting ready to launch the, alongside DDA, we're getting ready to launch the next version of the Dan Thompson. There'll be grant opportunities available. The amount of money will be much smaller this time. It'll be around $5 million. But the council is working right now with DDA to craft what the parameters and the experience and the process will be for folks to apply for that grant coming up. There are just a whole bunch of different neat things that we're doing as a council. We are always looking for new members, especially representative of different parts of the state, and not just places, but viewpoints and cultures and needs. So, you know, if you have folks that you think would be good members to join our council, we meet 4 times a year, typically in person, although those meetings are hybrid. And so if they wanted to join that way, that's possible. There is a button right here, become a council member, that they can go to learn more. And if they need help filling out the form, we would be more than happy to help them with that. I also want to tell you that we are planning to come to your community, in, I want to say, the fall. Does that sound right, Alex?
Yes. You said October. Or
yeah, October. Yeah, so I know Trish, we had talked about it coming in the spring, and during the last council meeting in Yakima, folks said, how about we come to Vancouver in the fall because it's easier to get to than they actually wanted to go to OMAC in, in April, and so we're trying to figure out how to get 25 council members to OMAC right now. And I think we'll be planning to be in Vancouver in the fall, and what we've been doing the last several council meetings is trying to create some type of local community event on the Wednesday prior to our council meeting that's on Thursday and Friday. So, for example, when we were in Spokane, we held a town hall that was really well attended by a lot of folks in the Spokane area to talk about what's happening in our system and in our community. When we met in Yakima, we took a tour of Yakima Valley School. And council members had the chance to learn much more about that facility as well as the other facilities that our system funds right now. And where folks are living and what happens to them. Actually, Judy and Andy, I have on my list to
reach out to some folks in your community. Ryan Johnson's one of them, but they're running apparently a great, a successful crisis program helping folks in the community to look at what that model would be. So I would encourage you folks to be thinking about what would be a local, useful opportunity for your community to hear about the council, for the council to market ourselves, because we're always looking for new members, and potentially help move the work forward somehow to improve your local community quality of life in the IDD community.
Trish, has a question, Brandy.
Yeah,
great. Hey, Brandy, as you're thinking about October, just keep in mind that the advisory board typically hosts our National Disability Employment Awareness Month event on the first or second Wednesday in October, so we just hope we would be able to attend that and the DDC town hall as well. So,
thank you.
Thinking about scheduling.
Yeah, thank you. I'm pretty confident that was taken into consideration, but I'll double check first. That's great. You both hold one of the best employment awareness events in the state, and I would definitely not want to compete with that event.
You can come to it instead.
Yes, there's a question.
Yeah, I would love to come to it.
Here.
Actually, I used to work for a company called Trillium when we opened up in Vancouver in, I don't know, maybe 2008. I helped open the office, and then I managed an office in Portland that serves your community called WISE for several years. So I hold your community near and dear to my heart, and used to serve Calais and Romania. So anyway, I know your region pretty well, and am super honored to be here tonight chatting with you folks, and also it's great to hear what's happening.
Okay. Mona has the mic now, so she might have some for you.
Hi, Brandy. I'm curious about your local leadership projects currently in this five-year plan. When I was on the council for about 7.5 years, and we had a very robust local leadership programs and projects throughout the state at that time. I haven't heard a lot about what's happening. I assume things were sort of on hold during COVID, but can you speak to current local leadership projects? It did go on the website and it mentioned some counties, but it doesn't really give much information about what those look like or who's leading those.
Great, thank you. Yes, my knowledge, we do not currently have a local leadership project happening, and there have been lots of folks that have reached out saying, could we get that going again? We do currently have a program going with Open Doors for Multicultural Families. It was awarded during, I want to say the last, maybe it was 2 contract years ago. You know, we work on the federal contract here starting in October because we get our funds from the federal government. And so Open Doors currently has a contract to run a program right now called SALT, Self-Advocate Leadership Training, and that is specifically geared towards self-advocates who are people of color. And then they also have a family training series going, and they are working to educate folks, mainly from the BIPOC community, who want to learn how the system works and how they can advocate for it. And so we've been having lots of talks about what else can we do to supplement that and bring more community members in across the state. And I welcome ideas around that as we kind of think about, you know, coming out of the pandemic, we have a lot more resources at our disposal now. For example, I can sit here with you and be a 5-5, you know, 3 hours away from you. So how can we take advantage of that to collaborate and mix the communities up, but also still help folks focus on their local needs and growing community members that are able to speak to our issues? So I'm all ears for that if you are interested in talking about it.
Great, I'll get back to you.
Great, thank you so much.
Okay, and then Alex has, I think, a reminder or something.
Hey, Brandon, you forgot to show the recycling tool.
Oh, I'm going to show that to Alex. Cool.
Yeah.
And I think many of them know about it at this point because so many folks have it. But I saw a message from you about language access. I'd love to talk more about that with you. We installed this recycling toolbar. If you look down in the bottom right corner, that little circle with the human in it, this toolbar is pretty slick. So it, when you push on that button, it puts this cool bar up here on the top, and there's all kinds of things that it will do for you. So for example, if all of these languages that you see, it will translate the words on the page into the language. And if it has a speaker next to it, it will also read in that language to you, so you don't have to be able to read in order to understand what's on the screen. You can change the colors. You can make it speak to you. There's all kinds of different accessibility pieces in here that you can access to be able to get information off of our website. And I think a lot of folks are using this type of tool right now. Our council is currently undergoing an assessment to think about accessibility. So for right now, if you want to be on the council and you read, it's much easier to participate than if you don't. And so we have employed an organization to come give us an accessibility assessment and give us ideas for how we can make the council member meetings and where our staff are doing more accessible folks. And so I'm excited to be able to share that information with you probably in the next 9 months as they go through that process to think that she saw that inside me toolbar and said, that's not very accessible for some groups of people with disabilities. And I said, well, we're all working towards building the tools here, and so we'll continue to evolve and get better as we learn. In the meantime, yes, I've gotten lots of feedback that the inside me toolbar, especially around language access and not having to read words in order to participate in the content, to interact with the content, has been great.
Can I share something?
Brandy, Gabriella in the room here has something.
Hi everyone, this is Gabriella from the CUN. Great to see you all. The bug in your ear about the services and resources we have or we don't have down in Southwest Washington. Probably you remember in our last DDC meeting, I was sharing that I was having an explosion of families coming, new families registering, coming to us. And this is for DDA and also for the DDC and for Clark County. Today I actually found out that Vancouver ranked number 40 as number one city of the Pacific Northwest as growth explosion. So that may be the reason that we are having so many families, more families coming to us with children with disabilities, because every week we have more and more families. So it is great that we are having resources and that we are having more programs. And I'm sorry to say, but we need more. So, as good as for the go ahead.
Can I clarify? Did you say Somali?
No, 40. The 40th largest city in the country, number one in the Pacific Northwest. Vancouver, Washington.
In general.
Vancouver, Washington is the number one in the Pacific Northwest as growth explosion as of Census Bureau results came out. So that's why we have so much growth and so many more families. So I just wanted to mention that. Thank you.
And I'll just throw appreciation to you, Gabriella, for always saying, what about Southwest Washington? Hey. We need more services in Southwest Washington. It's great to have you representing in that way.
I think that the Clark County Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board would support Gabriella in that as well.
Thank you, Brandy. Does anybody else have questions or comments before we move on? Okay. Seeing no one, if your brains are not already full, we'll just put a little more in. Darla, you are up with, oh wait, yes, you're the legislative update, then we're going to look at our agenda.
I am the legislative update, thank you so much, and thank you to Judy and Andy
and Brandy for your presentation. Those were just great information. I'm actually not going to give the legislative update today. Hattie is here. Hattie Chicken from Peace Northwest. She is phenomenal and one of our amazing team members. And Hattie's going to give the legislative update today as I'm still on medication and recovering. So, Hattie, please step in and take over. But I am here to answer questions if you guys have questions later. All right. Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
And since she's recovering, I'm now coming down with a cold, so I will do my best to put the words together to make coherent sentences. So if you have any questions, just go ahead and stop me. So I took a little bit of time to come up with some talking points this evening. And all through the year, Starla, myself, and our team members, have conversations with community members, individuals, our colleagues across the state, and meetings like this and other ones that we attend. And we just kind of listen for common themes that come up, kind of some barriers and some challenges for families. And some of the top things that we have heard this year are that individuals with IDD have a right to be safe in their homes and communities and receive support wherever they choose to live, with access to their community as they choose to access it. Also that there is a huge provider shortage, not just down here in Southwest Washington, but across the state, and a lot of our services offered through DDA and others aren't available everywhere in the state, so that's a really big burden to families. And also, with the staff shortage, we also understand that part of that is that our providers aren't being paid a livable wage. And when we are asking somebody to sign up to work with our sons and daughters, our brothers, sisters, loved ones that have an developmental disability and just offer to pay them, you know, $18, $19, $20 an hour plus tax, or, you know, they could go down to McDonald's and make the same, but be burgers and not have to, you know, have maybe the emotional toll that can go with that. Sorry, I just completely lost my notes. Yes, so we just want to make sure that our providers are paid a livable rate as well as they have access to training that is meaningful to them and that is not necessarily just based on the aging model, because as of right now, that's kind of the training that our providers are getting, and it's unfortunate because it's not really relevant to most of the clients that they might be working with. Something else would be an isolation and restraints of all forms in the K-12 school system. Right now in Washington State, it is legal to both physically and chemically restrain students at school. So I haven't heard of any chemical restraints done, thank goodness. But that is definitely something that is a huge issue. And that was some legislation that was dropped last year during legislative session, or I guess this year in 2023. Unfortunately, it did not pass out of the committees in time. So we are definitely going to be picking that one off where it left off this year and hope that the legislators can come to some sort of agreement, because I think we can all agree that that is not a great model. Also, ending the funding cap on special education. Gabriella mentioned that we have an abundance of people moving into Southwest Washington, and for whatever reason that is, we have a very high rate of people that have IDD and that are on IEPs within school, and it creates a huge burden for people, especially in the rural
school districts that might not have the resources that some of the bigger school districts have. So that is definitely something that we're looking at and hearing. And then support the implementation of paying parents of minor children to provide personal care to their own children. There was a work group done on this that was funded, and that is been complete. And there will be a legislative ask this year. We have representatives. I can't say their name. Jamila, Brandy, Darla, anybody? Do you remember how to say your name?
Carmela?
I don't remember.
Is it Carmela?
I'm sorry, there was an echo. Can you say that again?
Elma?
No, I'm sorry. It's one of the representatives. She's a state representative up from the Seattle area. Her first name is Jamila, and I think it's Hyabal, something like that.
Hyabal. Hyabal.
Oh, thank you, Gabriela. So she is going to be a sponsor on that bill this coming session, and they are looking for a companion in the Senate to run that. So that's really exciting. One last thing on here is that we, as the legislature does, give more money to some of the service providers like Westman Residential or Community Engagement and Respite. Unfortunately, the hours of people that are on the waiver services are going down, so we just would support like a pay parity where we, as the rates go up, the hours don't decrease, because that's not necessarily equitable or fair to the individual to get less services as we account for higher wages. Some bills that we know that are coming back for sure is the REIT bill. REIT is an acronym. It is the real estate excess tax. And a portion of that, and I believe, Sarah, you want to jump in, is at the selling of a home. Some of the taxes that are collected by the state would then go into a separate pot of money.
Yes, and so it's really to address affordable housing for all individuals. But there, the way the bill has been written, there's a certain percentage of that would be set aside just for individuals with IDD. And if we could get that bill to pass, it would really solve all the affordable housing issues for our IDD community. And so it is a huge bill, and there's a lot of misunderstanding around it. There's concerns from the realtor agencies and different things like that with the larger, like when they sell the businesses and the larger commercial properties, right, that it's going to have an impact on that. But the legislature did a ton of work last year and really has fixed a lot of those issues so that's not going to be a problem. So you're going to see a big push on that bill this next year.
So that one, and then I mentioned the isolation and restraint will be worked on. OSPI put in a request for a substantial pay increase for parent educators to make a livable wage across the state. At a meeting with OSPI's Chris Heindahl, he had mentioned that it was anywhere from a $5 to $8 per hour increase for all parent educators across the state as of right now, so that would be huge. Also, the Nothing About Us Without Us bill, that's a bill brought forth by the club advocates, and it would establish kind of a best practice for inclusion of people with disabilities to be on boards, commissions, and work groups, as well as anywhere else conversations are being held about them. And then this last one, I was told by my King County counterpart, and it would end a funding delay between ESIT and the providers.
Is there any questions about those or comments?
I'm not seeing any in the room here. Are there any online? Hattie, thank you so much.
Then just the last couple things I have is we have a few important dates to jot down. So November 9th, which is a week from tomorrow at 9:30 a.m., PEACE is hosting a legislative coffee chat with our 17th legislative district representatives. As of right now, all three, Rep. Harris, Rep. Waters, and Senator Wilson will be in person with us. And we have several constituents that will be there and hopefully some advocates that will show up and tell them what we need. We're in the process of planning others for the 18th and the 49th. And we hope to have those done before the first week in December, but I mean, I don't see why not. We'll just make sure that that happens. Advocacy days, where is the 17th LD copy? We don't know yet. It actually just got changed last minute this morning. I had it all set up for somewhere over in Camden, and they didn't get back to me today. So hopefully it'll be at, it's a little coffee shop on the corner downtown, and I can send that address out as soon as I confirm that they are still available. They have a nice little back room that we were going to meet in.
We can share that. If you send it to us, I'll send it out to the board and our public meeting list and our providers.
Beautiful. Thank you. And then yesterday, we received our official schedule for the advocacy days that happen, that used to happen every Wednesday up in Olympia, where we'd all get together and have the conversations and a day of action. They are going to be online again this year. The first one's going to be January 10th. There was no mention of a legislative briefing or reception, which is different than they've done in the past. I'm not sure if that's going to be separate or what that's going to look like. But starting January 10th through February 28th, there's eight advocacy day scheduled, and they're tentatively scheduled from 10 a.m. until noon. And then PEACE Northwest, myself, Darla, and whoever else wants to come with us, we are planning on heading up to Olympia once a week. We haven't decided if that is going to be on Wednesday or on a different day. It just really kind of depends on the legislators and their schedule. So if anybody would like to join us, we will be providing transportation from our county, usually from the mall area up to Olympia. We stay there for 4, 5, 6 hours and then head back down. It's a lot of fun. I know a lot of you online and in the room have gone with us before, and hopefully this will be our first post-COVID year that it will feel like a normal legislative session. I know last year we were like locked out of the buildings and couldn't go and follow our legislators when we wanted to, so hopefully that'll be different this year. And then in January, also the first week of January, I believe we have it scheduled for January 8th, but I will confirm and send out that information when I have it myself, as well as one of my coworkers will be hosting a legislative slash advocacy day 101. Just to kind of talk about how to chat with your legislators, how to sign up to testify, how to make your opinion on a bill known. And if you do want to go up in person, we'll go up well with that as well. And I think that's it.
Hattie, thank you so much for all the information that you provided and the opportunities. Hopefully, there will be some takers to go up to Olympia, but everybody just needs to stay healthy.
Yes, please do.
Yes. Okay. Take care of yourself. Our next agenda item, unless somebody has questions for Hattie. Okay. We are now going to try to finalize our DDAB legislative agenda that we started looking at last September. I think we came to some kind of general agreements and maybe had some wordsmithing. Trish, do you have share the screen?
Yeah, I can share the screen. There, I took a bunch of notes from the conversation last time, and I did want to share also what the ACHS, the Association of County Human Services, has come up with, just real quick, if that's okay. And then I'll share the screen with the agenda with the notes from last time as well. Is that right? Okay. So what I have here is the legislative agenda that the County Association of Human Services Developmental Disabilities Committee developed and came up with. So the three main priorities are related to employment and community inclusion services, infants and toddler services, and housing. I'm going to skip to the second one because this is one of the things that Hattie mentioned about continuity of care for infants and toddlers receiving early support. So evidently, through, I don't know why, the providers are not able to bill for the first month of service because of how the billing works. So this is something that would close that loophole so that the providers can bill starting within the month that they're actually serving the customers or serving the babies. This one should be a familiar one as well. The first one on the ACHS agenda is ensuring employment and community inclusion services. And this is really about increasing the rates to reflect what the rate study recommended. And that's something that you all supported last year. And then address the housing crisis faced by individuals with disabilities. There was also a report that the State Developmental Disabilities Administration produced dated October 1st, 2022, and the association is recommending that the legislature implement those recommendations from that report as well. I'll pull up and share the agenda that you all have worked on. So this should look familiar here. We have supported employment. This is the language from last year related to employment services for people with disabilities. Y'all wanted to support the recommendations from the report to the legislature dated October 1st, enhance employment funding, funding for competitive integrated employment, and enhancing opportunities and supports to access higher education for students as appropriate. Housing and residential supports, y'all wanted to include a note about disparities that are experienced in communities of color. Our housing unit has some really clear and compelling data that people who are part of communities of color are more likely to experience housing instability. Let's see here. And then we have also aging, was a concern, and I have this note here about supporting someone who's also being supported by aging parents. And then a bunch of other notes. So, early childhood, medical providers, Vancouver merging with unincorporated areas and taxes, Southwest Washington annexation, and just this whole idea about, you know, Southwest Washington being represented, and we got the DDC to hear, come, you know, hear from us. So that is what y'all talked about last time. So where do you want to go now?
Bob and I have been passing notes, and under the housing umbrella, the bill that Hattie and Darla just talked about with the set aside for the taxes to support affordable housing for people with IDD should definitely be highlighted in that section, if that's maybe not even this, just what we address.
Hattie, can you put that language in the chat?
Yes, I will right now.
Okay, so we'll put that in.
Okay, so what are, whoops, and so everybody else, what are some things that you either want to adjust based on what we just went through, enhance, word more specifically? Feel free to chime in. Thanks, Alex. Okay, so should we start back up at the top with employment and see if there's any wordsmithing we want to do there?
This is the language from last year, and last time y'all talked in September, you didn't have other thoughts about this. That doesn't mean you can't have thoughts now. Bob's got a comment.
Oh, sorry. I don't have functional vision.
Hi, this is Bob. I just wanted to say that I had that one message sent around for participating in the Governor's Committee on Disability Issues and Employment, and that is coming up this week, and it would be interesting to see if the legislative agenda is being adjusted by the input that comes about from that meeting. So one possibility is to wait for that feedback loop to happen, and then possibly send around some additional notes that we might want to include, perhaps.
The board would need to schedule another public meeting to take action on any updates to the legislative agenda. So if y'all want to do that, then that would be fine.
I mean, it would be another public meeting because we want to have this done by the end of the year. We won't be meeting again until January.
Right. So what I could suggest is that if it comes to some important, stressful issue that needs an extra push, because we cover a lot in what we are doing, mm-hmm. but if there is some specific point to that, is it possible for us to do it remotely?
Absolutely, yeah. The advisory board can meet remotely. We just have some notice requirements that we need to fulfill to give the public notice about that we're going to be having this meeting, which we can definitely do. And the process in the bylaws is, you know, basically that the board chair can call a meeting, an additional public meeting.
Do it Christmas Day.
Perfect.
Susan made a joke about doing it on Christmas Day.
It is freezing.
Hattie has her hand raised.
Oh, Hattie's got a hand up.
Oh. Hattie, did you have something to add?
I did. I'm not sure why this didn't, I didn't add this in, but there is one other thing that you all might be interested in, and something that we have been hearing and kind of having conversations around is developing a wraparound life transition standing service for adults with IDD who have aging caregivers, is kind of similar to the service that's offered to the people exiting specifically for our, you know, 80, 90-year-old parents that call and say, I have a 65-year-old son with IBD and I'm not sure what to do. Starline, I get those calls often. Thank you.
Thank you, Patty. So a couple of things that come to mind about that is that, so would you like to include some language about, you know, a multitude of community resources, including wraparound supports for aging caregivers? Another thing to consider might be supporting the report, the DDA, the housing report that DDA put out. Just some options there.
Did you want to do that?
Oh, anybody can chime in. It doesn't have to be me, does it?
No.
You guys are all being so quiet. I can't believe we haven't heard from Leanne yet. She's still with us?
I don't know if she's still with us.
What?
I don't think she's still on.
Uh-oh.
I mean,
you can go with it. What you had last year, that's okay too.
Oh, right. Okay. So you know. So what is Amy's hand? Like the prior... I can't chat with too fast. My eyes aren't that quick.
Amy says, I like the priorities we reviewed, and I appreciate the idea of including recommendations from the reports. I feel like these continue to align with the concerns we are hearing.
I don't know if this is, like, appropriate for the legislative agenda as we're talking about it right now, but one of the things that I was very struck by, and I, you know, listened to Gabriella at this point before as well, is how much we don't have here. Like, why is that? Mm-hmm. You know, why is it, you know, there's, you know, the resources that we're talking about tonight from people, you know, that are here from DDA, and the nearest place is Lacey, or the nearest place is Port Orchard, and it's like, why is that? And so part of, as we're thinking about things that are, you know, included in our legislative agenda, we really need to start making the case that the population growth here in Southwest Washington has been, you know, more than almost anywhere else in the state, and we're still using, like, you know, formula grants from 1950. And we need to, you know, so whatever we're putting in our housing, or whatever we're putting in our legislative agenda, part of what we need to be doing in terms of making recommendations to the board to follow is better advocacy at the state level for apportioning resources, not just based on population per se, but population growth. That would make it a little bit easier. But just really, there's very few resources here, especially for minors, which is also another issue.
Thank you for sharing that, and I totally agree. Brandy's not here, but I always tell them we don't have that in Southwest Washington, certain services. I think it's because the state, I think we're, like, out of their mind, although I know we belong to Washington, because we're so close to Portland, they think that we can get things from Portland, but we can't. So, we just need to make the case that we need those resources in our state, and we're part of the state. So another issue is the provider ratio and the lack of providers. And thinking about the taxes that we pay in the state of Washington, and also the minimum wage makes it kind of difficult for it pay off to providers, because we are one of the highest paid states of all places. So I know it's kind of crazy. So all that is the recipe for lack of services, lack of providers, and lack of funding.
A lack of competitive wages or competitive salaries is not unique to DEA supports. In higher education, we struggle with this a lot as well. And the standard of living, again, particularly in Southwest Washington, it's gotten a lot costlier to live here, but you don't have providers may be paying the wages that they should for DEA supports or for IDDE supports. And so, the ledge needs to catch up with us, essentially, is part of my point. I appreciate that we're having communications with 17, 18, legislators. And for federal jurisdictions, maybe you could go and get something in Portland, VA, or, something like that. But most of what people need are state resources. And that's where, we're seeing that essentially you're left in the Seattle corridor. There's really no new growth, and we need to be part of the group that, pushes for that growth.
Also, I want to add to that is that having a solution mindset when we talk to our representatives, what's the solution? Because we can talk about the problem, then what's the solution and what can be done to solve the problem? I think that's the biggest part of the solution.
All right, I just want to jump in with something that's part of what I attended for this town hall for housing justice that was here in Vancouver, and Representative Stonier was there. And what she mentioned repeatedly was the collective of all of the communities that aren't Seattle, that aren't the overpopulated ones, that keep putting forward things like rent control that doesn't make any sense for a lot of communities, and all of the other legislative actions could be handled by communicating with others in communities that are also lacking services. So I don't know if there is a way for us to put forward kind of that collective, but maybe we can informally do that, perhaps, when I go up with Darla the next time. We can collectively work with other communities and other advocates to try and get some sort of common language that we can promote perhaps next year or in the future.
Also part of this is the new representatives that were elected. They're not familiar with the language, the work for people with disabilities or people of color or immigrants, things like that, and they, this past legislative session, they were still learning about some of the issues, and I had the opportunity to talk with all the representatives, and the ones that were newly elected, they had no clue of certain things that I mentioned, so I think they are in a learning curve, so hopefully for the next
In the Pacific Northwest,
yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
And also when we talk with our representatives, we need to talk about accountability, because if they say they're going to do something to support people with disabilities, they need to be accountable. So how are we going to make them respond to their needs?
Can we emphatically support the recommendation? For the rate study.
That was just a year ago. Wow.
Are you going to send that to all of us?
So, Gabrielle, you're talking about, you know, accountability, and to measure accountability is having actionable steps, like supporting the REIT bill that was set aside, you know, taxes, and are our legislators in this area doing that?
Well, and this is something that, I mean, Darla, Hattie, y'all can give us a report on what, who voted for what, right?
Yeah.
As we go through
session.
Make a
report card for them, Andy. Yeah. Do you want it as we go through session, or do you want it at the end of session? How do you want it reported back to you?
Say that, yeah.
I think at the end of the session, and so I'm sorry, but I don't have hairs on my tongue. I tell them, whatever you do, it will be public knowledge, because they are working for us. People get so worried. Oh, I'm going to go talk to my representative. What should I say? What should I do? I'm going to freelance. They work for you.
Mm-hmm.
So we just need to tell them we're going to make it public knowledge.
Yeah. We will give you a report card on each of them at the end of the session and before next year's election.
Yeah.
Yay, thank you.
I love this.
Okay, so is there anything else that we want to add to this agenda? And kind of in the,
is this a one pager?
It's still a one pager.
Okay, good.
But remember, we want to be succinct, but also direct. And
can you just go down to the ones of the comments from our last meeting, just to make sure that no one is feeling left out of those additional points
there. Well, there was stuff about the early childhood and the delay in pay.
And we added that in, right? Not yet?
I don't think so. We don't have an early childhood agenda either.
I think it's number two, isn't it?
Number two was housing. We had employment, employment, aging, or housing, the employment, housing, and aging were our agenda items. So we don't have early childhood in there this year, but that doesn't mean we can't do something about that.
I think it was on the ACHS priorities list. It was number two.
Mm-hmm.
And they worded it really well on that ACHS priority list.
Mm-hmm.
Do we
want to modify it and add something about early childhood and remove something else, or do we want to add? We typically try to keep the agenda, the three items, just to not go on and on and on, but we can do whatever anyone, Amy or Kristen, anybody else has any ideas about.
Perhaps rather than having aging be aging, we can talk about IDDD support over the life course, right?
Okay.
So you can work in early childhood, you can work in, you know, aging support in terms of caregivers, and also, you know, specific services specific to people who are, you know, aging themselves. Like,
mm-hmm. And so if we change our legislative item on aging to this lifespan services,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and include
but
stuff
then
about
you can grab that's the bolded part of two.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Aging is a relative term. You can get older every day. So we'll change aging. I think on our agenda, we'll change.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sharing the wrong screen.
Yeah, I thought maybe you were.
Yeah, here, let me see.
Can you start off with some sentence that says, across the lifespan, there are a number of important issues? There should be, or something like that, that should be addressed and then have improved care for infants in the first sentence and longer life expectancy is the second. So, does that make sense?
Do we want to go with this statement down here, develop wraparound transition, life transition planning?
I think that was an important part.
And then take this other part out that we had from last year. Do you want to do that?
To make it one page.
Yeah. And I think a more succinct ask.
Yeah.
Right? Because in the previous number of years, aging has kind of been a little softer of a, like, hey, we think this is an issue you need to pay attention to. You know, that's what you have been saying in your meetings with the legislators. And they did, a number of them did come back and say, well, what do you want? You know, we're like, we just think you need to pay attention to it, or, you know.
Yeah.
This is an option of something we can ask them to do if we support what the parent coalitions are talking about.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
So move that up and kind of done plan, or make it on the second page.
Or shrink the phone.
That's
yeah.
worse.
Yeah. Make the margins as tiny as you can.
Now you could bring the development in a lean in. You could say on the other side, on the other side of the lifespan, develop it and make it part of the same paragraph.
Yeah.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, lifespan services, housing up above with the REIT Act and then employment.
And you got extra extra.
It's one page, but here I'll make it bigger again.
But you got extra space on the housing, above housing.
Okay.
wonderful legislative priority list that covers most, if not all, the needs, most of the needs here in Southwest Washington. So I just would like to say thank you. I think that was lovely.
You want to take a vote, Susan?
Yeah.
Okay. Now that we have wordsmithed our document and kept it to one page, but secretly snuck in a fourth item, would anybody like to have more of a conversation? Are we ready to vote? Do I hear a proposal?
A motion.
A motion.
I make a motion to vote on the legislative agenda.
And do I hear a second?
I second.
Okay. We've got 2 seconds. Any conversation we need to have? Any more discussion? All in favor of adopting our legislative agenda for 2024. Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none, the legislative agenda has been adopted for the 2024 legislative session. Thank you all for your contributions and hard work. And we have one glorious final item. Gabrielle is going to give us a quick rundown of our Disability Employment Awareness Month event and tell us how fantastic it was.
It was fantastic. It was a great event. I enjoyed the venue, the attendance, the speaker, Rice. He was amazing. He was amazing. My son was like, wow, this was super cool. And then obviously, I honestly love the speaker and the keynote speaker, and when Bob suggested him, I was like, yeah, that's a good choice. And I'm glad he accepted to come down. I love something about the awards. His name is Kevin. I have a hard time remembering his name. His last name, I had to write it down. Barbon, that was the employee of the year. That he told his story. He wanted to work for the store, and he succeeded. I love to hear those success stories where it is not including housekeeping or cleaning, because usually when there's a person with a disability, the very first thing they want to put them to do is clean, and they never move out of that. So I really love the fact that he was employee of the year. So I'm sure you guys enjoyed that too. Anybody else wants to share your impressions from the event and also the postcard? That was a great idea on the chairs. So you guys did amazing. Thank you. Anybody else wants to share? I love seeing Mary's Trillo too.
She's yeah.
Yeah, so I wanted to keep it simple because I know we're tired and it's the end of the day, so thank you so much.
Bob keeps looking at me. Bob keeps looking at me. I think he's hungry. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for sticking with us through that important, long, and informative meeting. I now declare our meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.